Welcome to the Tate Talks podcast.
This podcast has been very kindly sponsored by JumpCloud for MSPs. JumpCloud for MSPs provides managed service providers a platform for delivering modern IT services that are identity-centric, cloud-native, and vendor-agnostic.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the final episode of this season's Tate Talks. Hope you've enjoyed them so far. We're going out with a little bit of a bang with a great chat with Andrew Allen, CEO of Abyss, who are a great MSP based in the UK. And I thought I knew Andrew pretty well, but I learned quite a lot, so I hope you do too. Enjoy. Hi, Andrew. Thanks so much for joining us today on Tate Talks. It's great to see you. How are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you, Chris, and appreciate the invite to come on your Tate Talks.
No, I've been looking forward to this one because a lot of the time I speak with different MSP vendors around the space. So I thought it'd be nice to sort of connect and speak to an MSP to see what's happening on the other side of the fence, so to speak. So before we get going, maybe you tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay, so I'm Andrew Allen, CEO of Abyss. A number of you probably have heard of us. We're an MSP based in the north of England, across Liverpool, Manchester, and Sheffield. We've been going for about 22 years. I've been there for just about a decade, 10 years, and I've been the CEO for almost 7 years now. I suppose like a lot of people, that MSP serving clients around cybersecurity and some of the other stuff. Really, our focus is around the advisory piece. So like we're always focused on how technology can help an organization achieve more of what it's doing. A lot of people talk about doing that, but I think there's a big nuance between talking about it and how you actually do that and deliver it. So I suppose that's our secret sauce, how we've figured out how to do that and create value.
Yeah, that's great. And it's thrown up a couple of questions straight away because I and I guess like a lot of listeners, would have assumed that you'd been at Abyss from the start. I think you've been involved in Abyss since I've known the company. So you were kind of, you were brought into that sort of about 10 years ago, you say. I've been CEO for 7 years. So how did you start at Abyss? What was your role there?
Well, in fact, oftentimes people think Abyss, I was there at the start because it's double A in the beginning. And it's absolutely nothing to do with Andrew Allen. It's actually to get at the top of the yellow pages. So that double AB was to top of the yellow pages. For some listeners, they might not even be old enough to know what that is. But for others, they're probably having a bit of a chuckle now. And I joined Abyss, actually. I did some consulting work. So I'd previously been successful in, if you like, I'm an engineer. I solve problems, but I'm not an IT engineer, although technology was a big part of my success. And so I met Troy, who's the founder of Abyss, and we talked about some of the things that are important. And as I say, I'm passionate about technology and how it can help and enable an organization to see and measure and how it can be more effective. And in that conversation, it was apparent that there were a number of things that, as a technology firm, they didn't quite have a handle on it. And so I started consulting with Abyss. And then a bit of time passed and we were making some great strides moving forward. And yeah, it was interesting really, because Troy and I get on really well. We've got a similar outlook, similar ambitions. And so it almost immediately, it was as if we'd known each other since we were kids. And I went home one day and Troy and I had been having a conversation about, well, what would it look like if I came there full time and, if you like, drive the business and the growth. And I came home and said to my wife, great news, I've got a job, which he thought I was totally bananas because like I'd got quite a nice lifestyle. I was consulting, much like when you've got a grandchild, you can have all the benefits. And when they need changing or like you want to go to sleep, you hand them off and they go and like you've got your life back. So she was a bit surprised that I was going to go back to work, as it were, and not just hand somebody else's business back to them and leave and go on to the next thing. But it was great. As I say, Troy and I get on really well. He's got strengths, I've got strengths, we've got other strengths in the leadership team, and the business has grown significantly in size, in revenue, in profitability, in the quality of the work that we do, the type and size of clients that we do, and if you like, the operational maturity of our organization. And that's come about by bringing in the right people as the business has grown. So definite intentionality of our positioning.
Yeah, well, that answers the next question I was going to give, which is around the name, the Abyss name, because I've always wondered where it came from. And I'll put a link to a Wikipedia article about the Yellow Pages in the description, because I'm sure there's some people listening that have no idea what we're talking about. But yeah, it does make sense now. And so you mentioned you were sort of consulting. Obviously, to get to be a consultant, you had to have sort of experience from doing other stuff. So what did your career look like before that?
Well, early on, I've always questioned why. So before Simon Sinek turned it into like a huge empire that he has, I've always questioned why. Like, why do something? Why is it that way? Why can't it be better? And in some ways, like, I wouldn't say that I'm a lazy person, but like, if I can use something that can do that quicker, faster, better, then that's what I want to do, so that I can use, if you like, my and others' human potential to do the things that are uniquely gifted to them. And some of the other things that technology can do, as I say, more consistently and more quickly, we'll use that. So do that in both ways. So yeah, as I say, I had this idea that I was going to be a structural engineer. And I started off down that road, but then I ended up, if you like, going into the telecoms industry. So that was unexpected for me. But there was a great opportunity. And when I say telecoms, I'm talking about backhaul infrastructure. So like the cell towers that are all over the countryside and on rooftops in cities and things like that. I was one of the bad guys going out there, making sure that they were built and sited. And if you like, creating some of the network that we use every day for making calls. And I was pretty good at that. You like, as I say, I was using technology and I was pushing and I became the youngest director of a global PLC because I was good at my job. And then the other opportunities came out of the back of that. And then because of my, I suppose, foresight and the way that I would rally a team around and if you like, that strength in a team and what we can deliver, that opened up new opportunities for me. I did reasonably well on an exit of a business. And so I ended up with, in a very, very comfortable position, which then led me into consulting work, really. I didn't need to go to work, but I enjoyed the helping and transforming, and I didn't want to start again. So after I'd exited, it was one of those that, like, it's really hard starting a business. But I'd got skills from, if you like, being in a small business to mid-size to like global corporate. So I'd got quite a different and varied experience. And then coupled with that natural questioning and making things work and, if you like, building things, they came together. So over that whole time, I ended up doing acquisitions and development and technology. And so, like, because I was senior and I was involved in a number of things, that gave me a rounded experience. And so that's how I ended up getting into consulting.
Yeah, and I guess a lot of those skills have sort of been useful now in the MSP world. And going back to Troy, I know you mentioned him, and I know that you two seem really, really close and sort of get on, work really, really well together. So, I mean, how did you first come across him? How did your paths cross?
It was actually a business networking event. And so I was naturally interested in what his business does, because it was like, it's all about technology and I love technology. And so, like, I am a nerd, and we had those conversations, and it was just through being curious about the business, and that's how we got to know each other. And it was definitely, we're good friends now. And our families, like, they come together often, but it started out totally as a work relationship. And so it was the other way around. It wasn't mates and let's get together. And it was definitely a try before you buy type of thing. Like, we both knew what each other's respective skills were, and we were better together, to use a phrase from network group. And to be fair to Troy, like, it's a big thing, I think, to if you like, hand the reins over to somebody when you've founded a business. Like, there's not many people who can get out of their own ego and do that. And I respect him massively for that, because that's not something that I ever expected or intended at the very beginning. I'm now a significant shareholder in the business as well. But that came years after I got involved, and certainly after I became CEO. So yeah, it's a really strong partnership. And that's one of the things, I suppose, that a lot of MSPs, certainly smaller MSPs, struggle with, that they don't have anyone who is maybe maybe they've not created a leadership team yet, or they have a business partner who's got different skills where they can share and bounce off each other and make sure that they're on the right track. So we've been very fortunate in that regard, that he and I both get on really well, but the wider leadership team complement each other. And so that helps build trust and creates, I suppose, a more focused organization.
Yeah, and it seems to be going well. And I guess one of the things that you mentioned network group there in passing, I guess a lot of sort of smaller MSPs or MSPs probably don't have that kind of in-company relationship, can maybe leverage sort of peer groups or networking kind of groups to try and bounce off other owners to try and get a sort of a similar experience to what you've got.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing, we are fortunate in that regard. However, we still actively participate in other peer groups, because you don't know it all, like, in your own experience, and over time things change and happen, and your organization needs different things at different points. And equally, I mean, like, we've met up at a number of conferences, as you say, and I often go with several colleagues, recently at the CSEO conference, Dato conference in Dublin, and five of us went, because I think it's important that all the people in your organization get to network and share and learn from their peers as well, because it's not a jolly. I think it's an investment in helping your team develop. And also, we can often take for granted the position that we're in. You like, the day to day, you do what you do, and like, it's only when you go out and you share those experiences and you learn from others that you can go, okay, well, that, like, we're doing really well in that area, or okay, that's an area that we might want to go and look at. And not from there's a new shiny thing, but it's like keeping one eye on the future and one eye on, like, where you're at right now.
Yeah, and I've seen you and your team at lots of events around the world, as you described. So I'm kind of, and I agree what you're saying about it's great to get more people involved. And I know you had a whole team in Dublin, and you have a whole team all around the world. I guess a lot of MSPs would see that as a large expense, which obviously it is. But I mean, you're obviously seeing the value in doing that and getting, I mean, getting five people over to Dublin for a week probably wasn't cheap.
No, although, like, there's a danger of me getting on my soapbox here now, actually. A lot of organizations think that it's expensive because they're not profitable enough. They're not necessarily providing the right service to their clients, or they're frightened of charging the right amount for the value that they help and create. So for me, it's like, well, I see that as we are investing in developing us as a team and our colleagues. And like, look, like, if you don't keep and retain people and don't help make them better, you like, you might keep people who are a bit crappy, and like, and then, so like, how does that help you as an organization? Like, I truly believe that investing in people and helping them feel part of that journey as well, like, that they are more inspired to fly the flag. And I've certainly witnessed that with colleagues who, like, listen, I'm the CEO, and I come back and I say, it's all great and we're going gangbusters and this is a great firm. Well, okay, people listen to that. But when their peers, when their colleagues are going and they talk to peers outside and they come back and they go, it's amazing here and this is what we're doing and this is the future and these are the things that are going on, they evangelize about it in a way that, like, I can never do. And people like liken that to how your clients and those referrals and those case studies, can do a far better job of saying what you do than you ever will either. And it's that same thing. It's that investing in the longer game. Like most MSPs have been around a long time. They're probably planning to be around for a long time in the future. Well, like you might make that investment today and not get an immediate return, but it's the longer game for me.
And you mentioned obviously staff there and sort of getting staff involved. And previously you mentioned the team that you've got and how sort of tight knit it is and everyone works together. And you've now got three offices, I believe. So, I guess the question is how have you, well, a couple of questions really, how have you maintained that kind of Abyss family feeling whilst expanding the organization? And also, how are you finding recruitment? One of the common topics we have is around recruitment. Obviously, it sounds like you're doing quite well on the retention side, which is obviously a part that's often overlooked, to try and retain staff. But I mean, how has the culture changed, or has you grown, and how are you finding it difficult to recruit new staff?
So everyone talks about how great things are going. And in some ways I could give you that as an answer as well. But the reality is it's really tough. Like, it is really hard. Post-pandemic, and I don't want to use that as a crutch, but like, it is so different now than it ever was, with people being on teams and being hybrid, and some people in an office and sometimes they're not in different places. And it's not even like the same as having different locations, because you've got different locations and people are in and out. And so communication is a real challenge. You're like, it's probably our hardest thing right now. And that makes it really tough. You're like, if you like, that's where my big area of focus is right now. And we're actually engaging with an external consulting firm to help us make sure that like everyone's rowing at the same time. Because I think sometimes it can be a little bit diluted and not everyone's on the same page, which bothers me. Yeah, that's why we're doing something about it. And I'm not coming at this from a like, woe is me or anything, but like, it's not everything's always rosy. And I think like, we're fortunate that I know a number of people out there see us as an aspirational firm. So it's like, if I just tell you all the great stuff, then well, that's good, but it'd be bollocks. The truth is, some of it is really hard work. And the values and the care that I've got about the people within the team, like, that matters to me. But you need to make sure that that's reinforced on a regular basis in the things that I do and my team do that like can cross those barriers of people being at home and coming in and out. And it's a challenge. In terms of recruitment, again, I mean, that's a challenge for everyone. We've got several positions right now that we're recruiting for, and we could probably recruit faster, but maybe not the right people. And so what we can't do is just try and get bums on seats, because again, that waters down the culture, and a wrong hire is really bad for business, much like getting a wrong client. Like, a wrong client can derail you, take a load of time, energy, money, and it's the same with people. So we're still maintaining high standards around that culture fit and looking for the right people who are going to come in. Because the technical bit, well, we can fill in the gaps. We can help train people and get that in, or in account management, like, we can help with those gaps, as I say, but we've got to hire for the right people first.
Yeah, and thanks for your honesty there. That was a great answer, because I know, as you mentioned, a lot of other MSPs around the country or around the world probably look up to you guys in terms of, you are this aspirational MSP of a certain size that everyone's, you know, really wants to kind of emulate. So it's nice to know that you've identified a problem, which is, you know, one of your key strengths, and you're sort of trying to do something about it. But there's no perfect answer, and it affects all MSPs. So yeah, I appreciate your honesty with that. So moving on to the next question is around sort of challenges in 2023 and beyond. We're in the second half of 2023 now. So obviously we've mentioned a few challenges already for MSPs, but I mean, are you seeing any other particular challenges that MSPs are facing as we get into the second half of the year?
I mean, an area that we're focusing on, and I know is like, it's not unique to this part of the year or any year, and it's around that sales and marketing. We've been really successful despite ourselves. I don't know how we've done it, quite frankly. Like, we do a load of great work, but we're not very good at telling the world about it. We're not very good at promoting the impact and difference that we make. And it's funny, really, that we have within our industry, going back to that thing before, we're very fortunate and we've got a really good industry reputation. But then in the outside world, where our potential clients are, it's almost like tumbleweed and we're in the desert. And we've addressed that. Like, we've brought in, we've got an external marketing agency that we've been working with, and we've also got now internal full-time marketing. And we're switching gears on that, because that's one of those things where it's the longer game. Again, we're invested in that future so that we can be consistent in those marketing endeavors. And I suppose that's probably a big challenge for lots of organizations. And that marketing is also that internal to existing clients, where there's opportunities, and we've certainly, where we've acquired other MSPs, there's lots of opportunities in there as well for account growth, not just from a selfish point of view where we're going to add more money and bottom line to our firm, but like fully servicing those clients. Like, that's our responsibility as well. Like, we're doing this from the point of view of, like, well, the services and the things that we provide, we believe and stand behind. So we need to do a really good job of making sure that we protect and look after those clients in the best way we possibly can. So again, there's always growth opportunities there that most MSPs overlook and don't manage. But equally, it's that, again, planning for the future of developing the marketing and the outside branding. So that's, like, I suppose that's the big thing that we're pushing and working on now.
Yeah, and I think we're talking prior to the call about your marketing. It's pretty cool, and I'm seeing lots of it, which is good. And sales and marketing is generally speaking one of the bigger challenges that MSPs have. But with your consultative approach, I guess it's probably a little bit different to some others. So I guess it's probably, I don't know if it's a slightly longer sales cycle or whether it changes things. But I know that you, the way you operate is not, I'm not saying different, but a slightly different way of doing it to some other MSPs, which is interesting, but obviously ultimately proving to be very successful.
Yeah, I mean, it's that, I think our sales cycle is actually shorter traditionally, than the traditional method, because that initial engagement that we do helps qualify quickly, and it's also not as big an ask. Because when an MSP goes in and says, like, give me the keys to everything, and we've only just met, that's a big shift. Like, that's a big thing to ask for. And I wonder how comfortable MSPs would be to do it in reverse. You know, if someone comes in and says, I'm going to take everything off you, give me the keys and trust me. So naturally, that's going to take a longer cycle. And our approach more is making sure that we help educate clients what the future will look like, what their investment looks like, identify the opportunities and the risks so that there are no surprises. Because one thing that I do not like about our industry is that lots of people will go out there and they'll do an initial scan and maybe put an agent on a load of machines and check where it's at as a like a bit of an audit. And then they sign a client up for 3, 4, 5 years. And then once they've signed up, they go, oh, by the way, you need to do this, and then you need to do this. And like, if that was me, like, I'd be quite upset about that, because like, this is new information, and now I'm encumbered to you. Like, I would like to know that up front. And the problem there is lots of organizations don't know how to procure IT services, which is most organizations. And then truthfully, most MSPs don't know how to have those tough conversations about what's required from an investment point of view, because they're concerned that they might not win that business, or they don't get enough throughput of business opportunities. So therefore, they'll take that on and then they'll look to develop into that account over time. Now, I'm not saying that that's necessarily wrong, but it's not the way that we operate, and it's not a way that I would want, if you like, to buy services. So that in that way, it shortens the sales cycle. So someone decides quite quickly if they want to work with us or not, and then we've developed that trust understanding of what a future looks like before they say, yeah, we want to sign a term contract with you.
Yeah, and I guess that also helps with, again, going back to a previous point you made about having the wrong type of clients. I suppose you can, a bad fit client, you can weed a lot of those out at this stage by explaining what the future is going to look like, what the investment's going to look like, and then ensure that the client's willing to come on the journey with you as well.
100%. Well, they actually have to pay for that piece of work in the first instance. So like if anyone's highly tactical at their buying process, they're never going to invest in getting a plan and roadmap for their own business. So yeah, it's really quick at weeding those out.
Okay, that's really good. Right, okay, so away from the MSP for a little section, what do you do when you're not working or going to events? You know, are you a book reader, podcaster, TV, any other outside interests?
So outside interests, so I've got a few. One is, I love the outdoors. So I go running. I go running a few times a week. And then I'm also a lover of the mountains and the outdoors. A number of years ago, before I moved to Liverpool, actually, I was in mountain rescue. And that was an incredible experience. I got to mess about and do training with helicopters and winching out of that. And like a great group of people who were there to help and rescue and save people. And I've done all of that. And sometimes it wasn't quite as pleasant or end up in the right way. But it develops, like I've just got a love for the outdoors. So like often I will be out with my wife, and sometimes I might take the kids out as well if they really feel adventurous. And yeah, go out in the mountains. I'm also currently in preparation. I'm doing a trek in the desert. So I'm doing 100K in the Sahara Desert in November this year for charity. So I'm going out there because that's quite extreme. And I'm currently trying to convince and talk my wife into ice climbing in Norway in December, because that's right up my street, although she's not quite as keen on exposure and cliffs and climbing as I am. But hopefully I'll get her there.
I wasn't expecting those answers. They seem pretty hardcore. Running, I think I know you do the running because you're one of those, and I say the term loosely, annoying people that turns up for these every time there's an event and there's a late night and I'm still sort of tucked up in bed feeling a little bit sorry for myself. You're probably out doing a 5K around somewhere and then, which I don't mind, but it's when people start posting it on LinkedIn and things that make me feel even worse. But yeah, so you're one of those, but yeah, lots of other activities as well. And the desert thing sounds intriguing. So if you've got details on that, I can pop that into the comments if anyone wants to take a look at what you're up to with that, because that sounds, to me, it sounds like complete madness, but I hope you enjoy it anyway.
Oh, I'll enjoy it. If it's hard, I'll enjoy it.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's kind of that's almost the opposite of my ethos. So if going back to the beginning of your career, what advice would you have given yourself? Would you have done anything differently, or are you kind of happy with the way it's all panned out?
Yeah, that's a big question, Chris. I've been really lucky, actually. Like a lot of people talk about their dad as being a mentor, and that, like, I was really lucky. I come from an entrepreneurial family, and I suppose I like doing hard things. So anything that's tough, I really enjoy. I've done ultra mountain marathons, and it's like it requires grit. In some ways, if not many people can do it, that's the sort of thing that I want to do. Because it pushes myself. I've not always done that. Like sometimes it's because I've been fortunate and I've been lucky, I've not always kept my foot on the gas. sometimes coasted a little bit because it's been a bit easy. And if I was to look back, it would be just keep your foot to the floor and keep going. It's one of those things where like you look back and like I've enjoyed everything that I've done. And I'm where I am now because of the decisions that I've made and the things that I've done throughout my life. But yeah, sometimes like just, yeah, keep your foot to the floor would be my advice.
Well, I'm a big believer that you kind of make your own luck. So I'm sure when you say you've been lucky, you know, you've been contributing to that as well. But it's good advice, I guess, to sort of just keep pushing, which is obviously what you have done and continue to do. So thanks for that. Okay, on to the final question. We're speaking to MSPs on this podcast. You speak to MSPs all the time at events and peer groups, and I've seen you on many different panels around acquisitions and business growth and all kinds of different things that you're an expert in the community on. But if you've got or able to give sort of one tip to MSPs out there, what would that be?
Know what your game plan is. So fortunately, there are lots of shiny things, and by the nature of what we do, people like shiny things. It's interesting, really, when you go to lots of these conferences, people are concerned about what you charge and what you do and how you do it. And in some ways, forget about that. Like, how can you help your clients do what they want and figure out what they want to pay for that? And so sometimes I think people focus on the wrong things. So you can't be all things to all people. So figure out what it is that you like to do, what you're good at, and then how you can create the most value for your clients. But that value has got to be determined by them. You can't tell them that you create that value. Like, so go and figure out how you can help your clients and do well at doing that.
Yeah, that's a really interesting and great tip, actually. So we appreciate that. And I'm sure the MSPs listening will as well. So that's it. We're at time. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to put all of your details into the sort of section underneath this podcast. So if anyone wants to connect to you on LinkedIn, I'm sure that they'll be able to. And I'm sure a lot of people listening will know you anyway from different events, but I'm sure it's been great value for people listening. So thanks again for your time, and I look forward to seeing you soon.
Thanks for having me on, Chris.
Take care. And that's that. That's it for Tate Talks for this season. Thanks so much for Andrew for joining me today. We will look forward to updates of you going across the Sahara. You must be mad, but each to their own, I guess. So thanks again to everyone that's listened to any episode of Tate Talks, to all of my guests, and see you again for the next season soon. Cheers.
This podcast has been very kindly sponsored by Jump Cloud for MSPs. Jump Cloud for MSPs provides managed service providers a platform for delivering modern IT services that are identity-centric, cloud-native, and vendor-agnostic. Using Jump Cloud's Open Directory platform, MSPs can iteratively replace point solutions by unifying device, identity, and access management. To learn more, please visit jumpcloud.com/MSP or email the team at partners@jumpcloud.com.